Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and I am the host of this show. My guests this evening are Connie Reagan Green and Jeff Hoff, authors of the recently published book entitled The Inner Game of Internet Marketing. I read this book, and I loved it. Connie and Jeff tell us who they are in the book, the challenges they faced and face, and their resolutions to finding success with their online businesses. Naturally, the inner game is an ongoing process. The beauty is in the journey, not the destination. The call-in number is 347-205-9277. Joining me now are Connie and Jeff. Hello there.
Hi there.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
How are you both? I think I heard both of you there. How are you doing?
Great.
I'm doing well also.
It's a great book that you both collaborated on and created.
Thank you.
What is, do you feel like the inner game is like the most important thing for internet marketers? I mean, obviously it would be true for anything. Any walk of life is the inner game. But for online, why is it more important, do you think, for online marketers to have this mindset?
You want to take that, Jeff?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the most important thing. I think everything that you talk about in terms of internet marketing is the most important thing, depending on what you're focusing on right now. But it certainly is a major part of any endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have things that are going on in your own sort of mental makeup that stop you from moving forward, you're not going to move forward in any area of your life. And if you start recognizing those things and start doing the things that and it's not difficult to do, it's just a matter of recognizing them and changing your thought, changing your life is the phrase that you hear a lot in the spiritual circles. You start putting new ways of thinking into practice, things will change outside in the real world. So if that is an answer to your question.
It is. And when you think about having your own business, it's a kind of a lonely process. And if you're not aware of the negative, that's just an example, negative self-talk. We know you address that in your book, and negative self-talk can really do you in, almost like immediately. So,
right.
And that would be one example of how when you are embarking on a new life, how you have to reinvent yourself, really. I mean, it's not like you're becoming a different person, but in a way you are. You know, you have your soul and your spirit. That's who you always are and always will be. But you have to live up to that somehow.
I like to actually not think of it as necessarily a reinventing yourself, because people hear that and they get daunted and they say, well, I can't do that, it's too much work. It really truly is, or can be, just a matter of unhooking certain patterns. And it's easier to think of it as unhooking. You're not trying to erase them. You're not trying to overcome them. You're not trying to battle them to the ground. It's no big major war. It really can be a simple matter of unhooking, and there's lots of different techniques that both Connie and I give in the book to do just that.
I
agree.
Unhooking. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree with what Jeff is saying, that, we really have all of us have inside of us that capability to achieve great things, and it's just a matter of thinking about it in that way and moving forward that – really will make a huge difference in everyone's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can have all kinds of different ways of having a business. But first and foremost, people these days are really thinking about a job escape plan. And to me, I certainly am and have been thinking about that for maybe 5 or 6 years, and have come back to internet marketing as my way out, as it were. And I really enjoyed your book because it outlines, it might sound simple, but it is it's a very in-depth thing. I can see that you're reinventing. I feel like it's a reinvention because you have to be, if you want to be everything that you can be, you are becoming.
You don't have to join the Marines.
I don't know if you know this or not, but I certainly wouldn't be one to do that. So.
Yeah, me either.
I don't think they'd have me.
I always wondered why women would want to be a part of the military or anybody else for that matter. But anyway, it's a very interesting that your book has a great introduction by Marlon Sanders, and he says things a little bit differently. I think you introduced the topic of confidence with his introduction. Why is confidence, I know obviously we all know the answer to confidence being so important, Connie, but you really stress that in your part of the book. So tell us a little bit about how you view that.
Well, I've watched, people from the time I was teaching is when I really first did these observations, and I saw, students and teachers, so children and adults, where what really mattered was their level of confidence. If they really believed in what they were doing, if they felt strongly about what they believed, they could do amazing things. Whereas someone else, even though they might have been smarter, better prepared, had ideas that were really more viable, it didn't seem to make much difference if they didn't exude that confidence. And mm-hmm. I know with me, I had to just kind of act as if. I had to do a lot of that my first couple of years online because I was just coming from a place of having no confidence, no self-esteem, and I had to show the world that I did have that. So every day I would just kind of psych myself up, lots of positive self-talk, and I think if you do that long enough, magically it happens.
Yes.
There's a great story that I just got reminded of, Connie, that ties right into that. The BMW, for a very long time, their slogan was the ultimate driving machine. And it really had become the ultimate driving machine, but when they first started using that slogan, it was not the ultimate driving machine. It was just another car. And they started saying that, and then they started believing that, and then they started engineering a car that was the ultimate driving machine. So it became true because enough people believed in it.
Yes,
that's a
great example.
Sense. Yeah. And that is what you're talking about. So what you're talking about is telling yourself enough times that you are a child of God, or you are a spark of the divine, and you need to keep at it, just until you believe it. Act as if, because it's true.
Yeah, and I know in my case I really found that to be true, and I thought, I don't really have anything to lose. I'm going to walk around and hold my head up high and just act as though everything were already happening and unfolding the way I was dreaming of it happening. And sure enough, magic began to happen in 2007 and into 2008. It didn't take that long.
Now, how did goals fit into that for you, Connie? I know that it probably mattered quite a lot and figured in with your plan quite a lot as to your success plan evolved because of goals.
Right, I'm a big goal setter. The very first person that helped me get started with my new way of thinking was someone named Raymond Aron, and I'm still in touch with Raymond to this day, and he has a goal setting program. And I do it, I don't do it on the first of every month, I do it whenever the date cuts off, so I just did it at the end of January. And I do that every month, and I take a look at what I want to change in my life. And it's little baby steps, little things at a time. And he always says you have to clean up your messes. And so I always, you know, look for a physical mess. It isn't always a physical mess, but many times. And, you know, this month I'll be cleaning out my garage. But the greatest thing about goals is that you don't have to actually be the one to do it. So in terms of cleaning the garage, I only will oversee that. I won't actually touch anything. So that works out well. Whereas something else, you know, I've started a new exercise and, you know, diet and fitness and working out, all that. I have to do every bit of that. I can't outsource any of that.
But wouldn't it be great to be able to?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? But, you know, that's something that has really made a big difference, and something I don't talk about a lot, about all the goal setting that I do, but I think it really has made a big difference in my success.
Yeah, I mean, if you combine a goal statement with words that resonate with yourself, and some people suggest that you say that to yourself two or three times a day, or even more. You have it hanging up. You look at it pretty much all the time, so that you keep it close to your heart, I guess, and it just keeps evolving.
Yes, and I think that's the way to think of it, that it is something that continues to evolve, and that if you don't think about it, then you can't really expect to get anywhere. It's sort of like that saying, you know, if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up somewhere else. I think that's the saying.
Yeah.
And that really is true. A lot of people just every day, they're just kind of plodding along and plowing through what they need to get done, and they don't stop to see how is that going to fit into the overall big picture. That makes a big difference.
Well, don't they say that as far as an airplane pilot goes, that he or she is constantly making changes to the destination?
Yeah, course correcting.
Course correcting, yeah. And that is a very beautiful metaphor for it's not like once you set yourself in the right direction, it's going to necessarily, you just have to keep, you know, changing your own course and keeping yourself on course. Now, don't you both agree that one of the challenges of being online is somehow like an ADHD distraction, forgetting you went somewhere and you forgot what the heck you were doing? It's like you have to train yourself to concentrate, to figure out what you're doing in terms of a project, and block out time and do it and not get distracted so that you can get it done within a time that makes sense. Instead of, if you let it go too long, you may never complete the project.
Right, but I think within that, you have to allow time and space to daydream. I'm a big
mm-hmm.
believer in daydreaming.
Yeah, I have a whole chapter about that.
Yeah, because,
yes.
You know, when I was teaching, the kids forgot how to do that. So, Jeff, you talk more about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
I was going to, you know, one of the things that I say is, you know, I have a really great example about that, about the bright, shiny object syndrome. It can really hamper you, but it can also really help. When Steve and I were writing our novel, it was a hysterical novel, and we would be sitting down, and one of us would ask a question about what we were writing about, and so we'd start doing research. And, you know, 25 minutes later, we discovered we had gone down some rabbit hole path that was in a completely different area from where we had first started looking, and found some delightful things that ended up being some of the best pieces of the novel that would never have gotten there if we had not allowed ourselves to wander, to meander a little bit. And there really
is an
importance to, you know, put into your schedule times to sit on the couch and do nothing and let your mind
mm-hmm.
percolate. You know, you fill it with all the information, you fill it with all the research, you fill it with all your goals, then give yourself at least a little time, 5 or 10 minutes a day is all you really need, to just
mm-hmm.
daydream that stuff so that your subconscious has time to process it. And that's part of the power, that's part of what creativity is giving the subconscious the time to meander. And yes, it can become a habit that slows you down, but if you completely cut it off, what you're doing basically is cutting off your creativity.
Well, I guess I was thinking a lot, I beautifully agree with that, And the creative process, we can touch on a second later, but I was going to say that one of the downfalls of an internet marketing, and everybody talks about it, is going for the next guru and not sticking with somebody. Or just going here and going there like some sort of person who has lost their way completely. So that is a roadblock to be aware of.
Well,
to
I describe find, it as people wanting different, they want different answers to the same questions. They want someone else to tell them something differently than what you've told them.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think that has to do with not having faith in where you're going and not settling down enough to to listen to what somebody is saying who's been somewhere where you want to go.
Right, but it gets back to confidence, I believe.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for, if you're looking for a teacher and you find a teacher that you trust, and that's a big job to find a teacher that you trust. And that's a little bit different than the inner game stuff, is finding the teacher or the mentor. But if you find a teacher that you trust, you have to trust the teacher. And at least at the beginning, if the teacher has been successful in doing what they're doing, if the teacher has taught people successfully, do what they say. Don't keep trying to get a different answer to the questions that you're asking. If they're saying, no, do it this way, do it their way. At least try it out. And if it doesn't work, that's the point where you say, okay, this isn't working for me. I've got to find somebody else. But what generally happens is, often happens, and I think what you're talking about, is people look at it, they say, okay, this person knows what they're doing, but I don't like what they're saying, so I'm going to find somebody else, and they'll never truly settle on any one thing, and they'll never truly get anything done. That's a whole different conversation than what I think Connie and I were talking about when we first thought your question was about. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, that's true. But confidence, it does come down to confidence. And if you really want to succeed at what you're doing, and if it happens to be online, then you really have to focus and concentrate.
Yep.
And realize that we need to, just know thyself, to figure out who we really are, and to share that with people. Like what you guys do in that book is share your various struggles and challenges, and you explain who you really are in that book. People want to know that. They want to know that about you.
Yeah, I think so, and I think people, have that right to know who we are, because when we come on the internet, we've really agreed to make ourselves public figures,
mm-hmm.
and you owe that then to people that, would choose to spend time with you in any way, whether they're investing money with you or just time or however they're going to engage you, they need to know who you are, what you believe in.
Yeah, and it's really cool that you both keep in contact with your lists. It's not unusual to hear from you every day, and that is really I think that is really wonderful, because I look forward to reading what the both of you have to say.
Oh,
and,
I like to hear that.
Yeah, you hear things like, sometimes people email their lists too much, but I personally feel that's not true.
Well,
Well,
hopefully, they want to know what we're doing, what's going on. Like right now, Jeff and I are going to be at an event in Atlanta, so we like to share that kind of information. So we kind of take people on that journey along with us.
Right.
Yes. And what is that? Is that an internet marketing thing?
It is. It's the NAMS conference.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. I have never heard of it.
It's the niche affiliate marketing.
Ah, okay.
Event, and it's getting bigger and bigger. No, nobody can fill a room like that event. They have almost 300 people that go, and at this point in time, it's hard for people to get 100 people in a room sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is cool. So you guys are going to have fun.
Oh yes.
Do you guys live near each other? Or did you collaborate on your book strictly from in a virtual way?
The book we collaborated on in a virtual way, and we live sort of near each other. It's probably, about an hour's drive, Connie?
Yeah, an hour to an hour and a half, but yeah. I guess we only see each other every few months.
We often see each other in different cities.
Yeah.
Like San Francisco or Austin or Atlanta.
Well, that's great. That's really fun.
Yeah, it is. It is fun, I think, the way we do it.
Yeah, and we talk a couple times a week, too. I'm sorry, go on.
Tell us a little bit about the creative process. That's so important to what everybody is up to. Because really, what you guys are doing and what people have to do if they're on the internet and do online marketing is that they are creators.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And a lot of people, for all of my life, I've heard people say, you know, oh, I wish I were a writer, but I'm not creative. Oh, I wish I could do this, but I'm not creative. And it used to just make me sort of clench in my stomach whenever I heard that, because I truly believe that everybody is creative. We are born creative, and we become uncreative because we believe people that tell us we're not creative, either that or that being creative isn't good. It's not productive. It's not going to get you a job. So, you know, squelch that and go live in the corporate world, or squelch that and, you know, go, be a secretary or whatever it is. But the truth is the best secretaries are the creative ones, and the best corporate people are the creative ones. They're the ones that actually allow their native creativity to flourish. And a lot of what I do and a lot of what I talk about in my part of the book is you already are creative, and I do some exercises in that to prove that you already are creative. So now that you've acknowledged that you're creative, there are things that you can do, very simple things that you can do that can reawaken your creativity. And kind of once you reawaken it, it's hard to turn it back off. You know, once you have that, your subconscious will start feeding you ideas and feeding you these little gems of inspiration that it's been trying to feed you your entire life, but you've shut off to. And once you open up to it, it's just really an exciting process. You know, and it feels like, you know, the universe is speaking to you, and it really is just your own mind that you has been trying to talk to you forever. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People have the idea that, say, with blogging as an example, that if you blog every day, you're going to run out of ideas. But that has never been my experience at all.
The more you blog, the more ideas you will have. That is guaranteed.
It's just like in the Bible, ideas beget more ideas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the great thing to experience. And when people experience that for themselves, it is truly a revolution. But, I mean, a lot of people actually do, more people than not actually believe that you can't come up with enough ideas. There's a scarcity principle going on there.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's sad that people do think, you know, that there are only a limited number of ideas, and if I use them all up, then I'll be done. And so they don't use any of them up. And the truth is that there is only a limited number of ideas if you think there are. If you don't use them, if you start using your ideas, if you start letting your subconscious know that you want more ideas, the subconscious will continue to feed ideas. And if you go through a dry spell, what a lot of people call writer's block, and I don't really believe there is a such thing as writer's block, but if you go through a dry spell, there are things that you can do to feed your subconscious so that it can then start feeding you ideas. They're very simple things, like noticing your environment, noticing the senses. You know, the five senses are the language of the subconscious, and the way to speak to the subconscious is through the five senses. So just go outside and notice what it smells like. Notice what it tastes like, what the air feels like against the back of your neck, what your hair feels like against the back of your neck. Just notice sensations, and your subconscious will start feeding you ideas. That's one way. There's other ways to do it, but that's a real simple way.
You know, that reminds me of a process of waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just kind of going through life in a rote sleep, or, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important to do those kinds of things, to wake up and to be in the now where everything exists.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have learned to filter things out because we have to, where there's so much input that we have to filter a lot of that input out. So we've learned to filter that out, and we'd go crazy if we let everything in. But there are times to choose to let everything in so that you become the controller of it. You become responsible for it.
Well, it kind of reminds me of a meditation, what you're talking about, though, with the senses.
Yeah, can be, absolutely. I don't
and
know.
You talked about this really cool thing about writing everything down that you are experiencing.
Kind of. I talk about stream of consciousness writing, which isn't unique. I didn't come up with that, but I do my own version of it. That if every morning you just do stream of consciousness writing for like 3 to 5 minutes, you will start noticing some amazing things appear on your page. It might take a day, it might take 3 days, depending on how long it is that you've been stuffing your subconscious. It might take 5 days. I doubt it will ever take that long, but it's possible. But if for 3 to 5 minutes you just write whatever's in your mind, even if it's, I hate this exercise, Jeff is stupid for telling me this, I hate it, you will start noticing that the subconscious starts blipping little things out on the page, and it'll be a shock to you, but it's an amazing process.
It's an amazing
process.
Yeah, and that's, you know, trusting in the process, which is so important, that we have to, you know, if somebody tells us something is a good idea, we have to at least acknowledge that and give it a try.
Try it, yeah, absolutely.
The Julia Cameron Morning Pages.
That's
very,
the first place I heard about
thing.
That exercise.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I have that.
And it's also in a book called Writing Down the Bones, and it's in several different places, and I just sort of appropriated it for myself because it works so well. I can't claim it as my own.
Yeah, you have to adjust it to your own way of being. But the morning pages do what you're talking about. It takes about 20, 30 minutes to do them, and you're doing the stream of consciousness thing. And it's all in longhand. It's better to do it in longhand. And I think almost anything, when you're taking notes, or even if you're taking notes and you're listening to a program and taking notes, there's something about writing it down like that where ideas will all of a sudden pop out. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So at one time I did this morning pages for a period of time, and suddenly I felt so alive that I thought that I might be about to die because I felt like a strike of realization that I felt so alive that I must be about to die. It was really, really very intense.
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And money. Let's talk about money, because that is a huge thing with success or the sabotage they're in.
I love money. I'll just go on record as saying that. And what I love most is what money can do in your life. It allows
mm-hmm.
you to do things that aren't possible if you don't have money. So
that's been really
a great joy for me to be able to do a variety of things that I just did not have access to before. Because definitely, you know, the pen is mightier than the sword, but having money allows you to make changes in the most peaceful way I have ever seen on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge, huge realization when I first became a part of that, just in a small way.
Because you're making a difference in the world.
Yeah, you're able to do things that help people that many times those people will never even realize what you did, and it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful thing that, you know, I would have been very angry with myself if I hadn't allowed myself to earn money to the point where I could see this in action.
Well, but the block, I don't mean yes, but that's what it sounded like. But the, I was raised, I don't know, I probably am dating myself, but I was raised with the generation of people who were raised in the Depression. So I remember the way my parents were about money. They never were. For their generation and their time, my mother didn't work, and my father had a job that carried us all through. But they had funny ideas about money, such as that you never tell anybody what you're making. You know, you never, as a child, as their kids, I never went running out and told anybody in the neighborhood how much my father was making, because it would have. I don't know what would have happened. Probably nothing that I imagined. But you know, it was like I had the fear of God about, or the fear of a very wrathful God about even mentioning anything like that. And but I noticed with my husband's parents and so forth, they were like saving things that were ridiculous to save, like, I won't even go into it, but things that didn't need to be saved at all. And there was just such a fear in that generation about losing everything. And, of course, we kind of are reliving that a little bit with this economic hypnotic thing that's going on now, and it's still going on, and it has certainly gone on maybe a few years ago, with the economic collapse, and it's still going on. So people are really buying into this fear of loss, and it's real for people, but it holds people back, too.
Well, I hate to be a contrarian. Maybe I don't hate it so much, and maybe I'm not even using the correct word, but, you know, I started in real estate. Well, you know, I grew up with no money, so my basis of thinking was, you know, and I didn't have a father in the household, so I could never even have gone out in the street and yelled anything, or they would have taken me away because there was no father and no money, and everybody knew the whole story. So, you know, that's kind of where I came from. But I started in real estate pretty early in my 20s, and what was behind that is I thought, gee, being able to help people get a house to live in is a great thing to do, and I wanted to have a house to live in, so I got started in real estate. And very quickly, recessions started coming, and some were bigger than others. None as big as this most recent one, but some pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And I never participated in one. I never could afford to participate in a recession, which meant I still needed to earn money and go about my business. So I've bought and sold real estate in every market. When I first was really getting going with real estate, interest rates were 17-18%.
Oh, boy.
So that was just my reality at the time. And the people around me that said, oh, you know, nobody will buy with these high interest rates, well, I didn't know any different, so I bought and sold anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that I've done, and including these last few years, because I always tell people there wasn't any recession on the Internet because my income continued to increase. So I've just never bought into that because it always comes down to one individual person. What can that person do? And if you lose a job because of some situation greater than yourself, then it's really up to you to do something to replace that income.
Yeah.
So,
it is.
You know, I just come from a different way of thinking, and that has served me.
Yes. Well, obviously, you have to change your thinking when it comes to money. Or what you're saying is that you really didn't have to change very much because it was, you know, you just somehow rolled with the punches.
Yeah, and I think that's part of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Where we really have to roll with the punches because the punches will continue to come, and it's just up to us to say, okay, well, we can't do things this way. Let's do something else. Like real estate, I always did a lot of creative financing. You know, if we couldn't get a loan one way, okay, how else can we make this happen?
Right.
And I owned five or six houses before I ever qualified for a loan. I just found other ways to buy.
Right. And it does come down to creative thinking.
Yes.
Were you, so you were in the real estate for a while after you were teaching?
Well, I continue to keep a broker's license in the state of California so that I can have my medical insurance with the group plan. That's really the major reason. But also, if there is something that I want to buy or when I sell a property, that way I can just do my own deal and I get that commission. And that's a huge amount of money. It really is. So it's worth the $400 or $500 a year to keep the license going.
Oh, that's really interesting. Good for you. Once again, creative thinking. Well, and health insurance, how do you all deal with that as an entrepreneur? Connie, you just explained how you deal with it. Jeff, how do you deal with it?
Well, I don't.
I thought so. I think
I don't deal with it. My business is not quite yet at the same level that Connie's is. I'm getting there, and it's actually getting to be a very exciting point. But you know, I have started to put in some of the things that people think about in terms of what a business is. I do have a corporation. I do, you know, with my business partner Steve. I do. We have the accounting. We have all of that stuff. The insurance is coming soon. You know, it is something that is vital to have, especially as we get older. but that's, you know, that and there are lots of ways, you know, to find good insurance out there. So, but that's not one of the things that I have in place yet.
Yeah, it's just something that somebody in the European countries and Canada don't have to deal with that. They have a system in place that is, I would say, friendly to we the people.
Yeah, but, you know, as someone who spends time in Europe every year, I have extended family in Finland.
Yeah.
I'll just say that socialism really sucks.
Oh, really?
It's really, really horrible. And they have a similar system in Canada with socialized medicine where they do pay for medical. They don't pay for dental or vision. That's 100% out of your pocket. But medical, mm-hmm. they pay for it, but you have to wait. Like, I had knee surgery. I had an accident at school in the first time was 1997, where I had an accident where I had knee surgery. And at that time, they made me wait all summer. I was at a traditional calendar school, and all summer I hobbled around, and I had a cane, and I was trying to still do my real estate. And it was really difficult. It was maybe 8 to 10 weeks before the workers' comp system would approve that I could have the surgery. So I had the
Aww.
Surgery, and then I missed school mm-hmm. for the first month because I'd had the surgery and everything, and I grumbled about that. But what I found out from that exact surgeon who did work on me, Dr. Ferkel is his name, wonderful man, he and his wife used to go to Sweden every year. They would leave on a Friday. They would come back a week from Monday. So they were there about 10 days. And during the Monday through Friday that they were there, he did surgeries nonstop, and the same mm-hmm. one that I had for a torn meniscus on the knee, which is a pretty common surgery.
Yeah.
And over there, the only way you could get on the list for him to do the surgery, you had to have been waiting a minimum of 5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, you mean people waited longer than me? I just was flabbergasted. And so he went on mm-hmm. to talk about that. And then, you know, when I go over there, I see that where, you know, the government then chooses the care that you're going to have and at what location and to what degree and things like that. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for our system where if you can pay for it, I pay $725 a month for my medical.
Mm-hmm.
If you can pay
mm-hmm.
for it, then you have a big choice about what you get done and when you get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So I like having that option. Over there, they don't have that option to pay for it.
In some
yeah,
countries,
yes.
if you do have enough of an income even the socialized countries, you can actually get insurance that's above and beyond what the country does, and that you know, again, for the people that have the cash to do that, there is that option also.
I always felt that, of course, I'm a single payer proponent, and we've been fighting for that in the state of Pennsylvania for a long time, and I think it needs to go state by state instead of the federal government really. Can't seem to do anything properly, but I just feel like that in, say, the UK, there's a lot of alternative medicines. The Queen uses homeopathy. There's a lot of alternative medicines that are used that really do lower the cost of everything. And I think that if we could adapt that in this country more, and of course we are having more of a renaissance with natural healing and alternative medicines and so forth. But that is just such a beautiful way for people to go for their care as opposed to just going to the whole 100% allopathic route.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And the doctor I was going to for so many years, I saw him go from when I first had cancer, he was my surgeon, and he said, you know, if you want to take any of those supplements, that's fine. But they're not gonna. They won't hurt you, but they won't help you. To 15 to 20 years later, him saying, "Let's explore and see what type of supplements there might be, and let's talk to the nutritionists to see what else we can find. So I think it's slow to come, but people are open to learning more at least.
More and more doctors are actually investigating it and actually prescribing that type of care. Absolutely. It's becoming much more in the consciousness. I mean, that's kind of out of the purview of Connie and my expertise, but
but we like to talk about it anyway.
That's right.
Well, I was thinking, you know, the right way this all came about was talking about medical insurance and how you guys deal with that as entrepreneurs. But as a nurse for so many years as I have been, I just feel that, and I was raised with homeopathy, and I was raised with those alternative philosophies. And those philosophies have served me so much more than the rote, the kind of cold mechanization of medicine. Even though I have been a nurse for so many years, I've really seen it as a nurse for so many years. The way that people burn out in the profession, and there's just too many people flowing through who aren't taking care of themselves. And I think alternative medicine helps people to take care of themselves. It gives them that philosophy.
Well, just like Connie and I were talking about with your business, when you have your own business, you know, you become responsible for your income. You become responsible for your life. You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book was finding ways to be responsible for your own creativity, finding ways to be responsible for your own inspiration as opposed to waiting for the universe to inspire you. You become responsible for it. You know, that kind of responsibility trickles down to everything in your life eventually. Is you need to be responsible for the way you handle your health. You need to be responsible for the way that you live your life. You need to be responsible for the way you interact with your neighbors. It's all part of the same conversation.
It is, isn't it? It's 100% responsibility, which is what all the entrepreneurial systems teach. There's a book that's just been written, and it's a guerrilla marketing book, but Jay Livingston, who's the guerrilla marketing guru, but he didn't really write the book. It's the fellow who wrote it with him, and it is called The Job Escape Plan, and I'm taking a little bit of a course with him and his followers who have read the book. It's really interesting because he talks about the mindset of an entrepreneur, and he really, really goes into it on these calls that he has. And one of the things he really emphasizes is 100% responsibility is the creative mindset that we've just been talking about, and how to, if something doesn't work, you know, obviously not every product that people put out is going to be successful, so you can't let that get you down. And there is going to be rejection, and there is going to be, he talks about going out every day and setting yourself up for rejection just to take it.
I like the way Pat O'Brien says it. Pat O'Brien says, fail fast and fail often. He says the only people that fail are the people that are doing something, and the people that do something all fail. So if you're failing, you know you're at least doing something. Fail fast and fail often.
I love that, yeah. And that makes sense. So we have to practice failing, and we have to practice rejection, and we have to have a sense of humor about it all and not take it so seriously.
Yeah, because I've failed more in the past 5 years since coming online than, you know, for the previous 50 years of my life combined. You know, and I felt like I had some pretty big failures then. But when I came online, I was forced to really put myself out there and put my information out there. And, you know, at least 50% of what I do really never gets off the ground. But I have to keep doing it to see what works, what doesn't work, and refine things, course correct, like we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You've been failing more, but you've also been making a ton more money.
because I've been taking so many risks.
The risk taking, yes, that is a beautiful spiritual practice in and of itself. You know, the risk, the tarot card risk card is the fool, taking that leap of faith, and knowing that you'll be taken care of, and that's part of the whole process, I think.
Yes.
And not to say that if you really did jump off a cliff, you probably wouldn't be taken care of.
Yes, well, the jump in the net will appear as a metaphor. It's not literal.
It's a total metaphor, right. But Pat O'Brien is both of your mentors, and he is a great teacher, and he certainly has put himself out there and continues to grow. And I don't know our listening audience, the people who are listening in, know about Pat O'Brien, but not everybody does. Probably who will people listen to the archives a lot on this show. So
cool.
Yeah, Pat O'Brien is, how long have you known him, you guys?
Well, I read his book when it first came out in 2007, Your Portable Empire.
Yep.
And I really resonated with that message, as did, many people around the world. And I knew that I wanted to be in contact with him somehow, some way. So I wrote a review of his book on my blog, and sure enough, he had a Google alert for his name and the book's name, and he saw it, and he came and wrote something nice. He made a nice comment. So it was my first real connection with him. Then I saw him at an event about 6 months later at a big seminar in Atlanta with
mm-hmm.
Armin Morin. And we didn't really connect there. I said hello, but, he knew other people, and I was, so new still at that time. And so we didn't really have that connection. And then the next year, that's when it was different. I had grown in my business, and he was more open to being receptive to people who come up to him and say hello. And
mm-hmm.
our friendship started, and now I consider him, one of my closest online friends.
Yeah.
Yes. You both do, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if either of you were at the Portable Empire Island on Second Life.
Oh, I tried to do that, but it was too hard for me. I couldn't figure it out.
I went a couple of times. It was fun.
Oh, my gosh. We were there every night hanging out with Pat up there. And then somebody came and destroyed the island. And then it was never the same after that.
Oh, my. I wasn't aware of that part of it.
Yeah, it was some kind of, sinister group.
Oh, gosh.
It wasn't like Island Fever or something?
It was quite an experience up there, and Pat was there every night, too. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of us were hanging out with Pat O'Brien in a sort of, or not even sort of, in a totally virtual reality. So
yeah, it was fun.
I might have even met you up there, Jeff.
It's possible. I didn't go all the time. I went, several weeks, several nights, but not every night. I don't tend to do anything like that every night.
Yeah, and after a while, I began to think to myself, "What the heck am I doing?" So because I wasn't really doing what Pat was talking about in his book, I wasn't
right.
really creating anything.
Right. Right.
So it was time to drop the whole thing. It was sort of sad. It was fun. Because it kind of shows you that nothing, something is so stimulating and wonderful, but it doesn't last forever, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know what I mean. Certain things
yep.
last forever in terms of the spiritual life, but when it comes right down to getting involved in something like that, you just know you might as well get out of it what you can and move
right.
on.
It's
yeah.
Transitory,
right. So you guys are planning to write any more books together?
Oh, yeah. We haven't planned
it,
but we're doing a bunch of editing of stuff and gathering other things, so yes, absolutely.
And the 10K challenge, tell us about that. Or this coaching thing that Connie and you guys are doing together.
Yeah, it was something that I had started in March of 2010 with a student. Her name is Helen Raptopoulos. And this was someone that, really was not making any money. And then she had taken one of my courses and started making a little bit of money, just a few hundred a month. And I said, well, why don't we share this with the world? And the program was very successful. We did it for a year and a half. And finally now she's, really launched out on her own. And we had taken some 10K protégés. Those were people that we worked with just for one time, just to give them that exposure and to see what they were doing. Jeff was one of those protégés. He was the only male protégé we ever had. And when I was looking for someone else to do the program with, I looked back first through those protégés, and I thought, really, Jeff, you know, really was the best candidate for that. And then I looked through other, you know, other areas, forums I'm in, and my own mentor program, that type of thing, and I kept coming back to Jeff. So I approached Jeff and said, you know, do you want to expose yourself to the world? And he was very excited about that. I don't know if it was what he thought at the time, but
yeah,
he's been very open to it, and they're just receiving him very, very well. So I'm very excited for him.
Yeah.
And you've had
an exciting process.
Yeah, tell a little bit about the process.
Well, Jeff, are you going to tell about the process?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell it from my perspective, which is way different from Connie's perspective. We've only
started.
We've only
just
started. And basically, Connie and I will get on a webinar where she will talk to me about my business, look at my different sites, look at what I'm doing, and give me recommendations about what would be more effective to put into place. And then we put those webinars into the membership area so the people that are part of it will get to watch those and get to actually do the same things in their own business and get to see, you know, what it is that Connie is coaching me to do. And then, of course, it's my job to actually go off and do those things that she has suggested. And then once we get on the other calls, she'll look at, you know, we'll look at the stuff. What did you get done that we talked about? What didn't you get done? Why didn't you get that done? What can we do next? You know, so it's an exciting and scary process because, like she said, I basically have to, you know, expose myself pretty raw, you know, so that, you know, there's very little that I will not be willing to share, you know, in terms of what my business is, because that's, you know, when you do that, that's how people can get in and look at what is working and what isn't so that I can get the coaching, because if I wasn't being completely honest and open about it, Connie could not coach me. And the other part of it is that it gives the people that are paying attention a real look at, you know, a human being who is going through the same thing, who is making mistakes, who is not getting things done, who is getting things done, who is having successes, and it puts a real human face on success.
It kind of reminds me of a mastermind that's being taken to another level. In a way.
You could think of it that way.
And also, it helps the people who are involved to see what a coaching program is really like.
It really does. I see, you know, a big part of what I do is building confidence, which goes back to what was in the book. Because if you have more confidence, then you feel better about yourself, and you present just beautiful things to the world. So that's part of it.
Yep.
Yes. And it could be that the people involved in what you're doing could get an idea as to starting having a coaching program for themselves, that they themselves would be the one doing the coaching in the future.
Yeah, all kinds of ideas come from this type of program, and it's just really a win-win for everybody.
It is, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
I think so.
And what kind of coaching do you do besides this program, Connie?
I have a mentor program, and it's extremely limited. I don't work with that many people on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
I try to work with about 20 people each year, and that's it. I really can't work with more people than that because I get very involved, and I've recently started to describe what I do as being a stage mother. And I know that can have a negative connotation, but, you know, when I'm working with someone, I really just want the whole world to see what I see in that person. And sometimes, you know, it's like our child. We're trying to get people to, you know, see that our child is the cutest, the smartest, the most talented, all those things. And, you know, unlike real life, I'm able to just keep harping on it forever. So I enjoy that process very much because I think it's a lot easier for us to brag about someone else, always. It's always going to be that way. That's just human nature. And that's why I have to choose somebody for this program that I really do care about and see huge potential in, not just small potential just to make, you know, a few dollars online. It's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to be working with Jeff.
Mm-hmm. I was going to make
really
a smart
great.
Out for- I was going to make a smart aleck remark, but I decided not to.
Oh, good.
Sometimes I just can't help myself.
Too bad we missed out on that one.
I was just going to say, she wanted to find somebody that had huge potential, but she settled on me.
Oh, that's cool. Oh. Well, now, that is another barrier to being successful in internet marketing, is this feeling that everybody else is somehow better than we are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's common.
It is very common.
It's very common, very common. You see other products that are being produced, and all of a sudden you say, I can't live up to that. I might as well just throw myself in the river or something.
Yeah, because I still do that on a regular basis. I see other people with the products they're creating, and you know, part of me feels like I'm not, you know, going to be able to do that. But then I take a closer look and I say, well, but for now, I can recommend as an affiliate those products because I do believe in them, and I can sign up for the program myself and then learn and see, you know, what made it so special in my eyes. So I allow myself then to explore those feelings if I feel inadequate when I first, you know, see something else that's out there.
Now, do you, when you enroll in different programs yourself, do you actually try to figure out how you can put your own special, what, you know, you figure out what you've learned and how to apply it to your own business, obviously. You do.
Yes, yes, but I usually am never doing it from the perspective of wanting to do something similar, because I feel that a lot of people that are doing things online, they're so excellent at it that I would prefer that they keep teaching whatever it is.
Yeah,
I enjoy being a part of it just from my perspective, and that's why I love affiliate marketing so much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to bring ourselves into everything that we do, which once again takes a certain amount of stepping away and the relaxation, and what we're talking about in the beginning of the program of this radio show was just being able to take a walk in nature and trying to figure out just to be, how to bring your own unique contributions to the world so that, you know, you are original. But at the same time, nothing is new under the sun.
That's right.
It's a very interesting way. It's a balancing act in a way that we have to rise to the occasion with.
Yeah, I you know, in terms of the nothing new under the sun, yes, that's true, and that actually, what Connie's talking about a lot is, you know, there are other people who do things. If somebody does something better than you, sell their product. That's absolutely good. But there are things that you do either better or at least differently than anybody else. And those are the things, you know, that you create your own product about. Those are the things that you give your own native creativity toward. Those are the things that you bring your own confidence to.
Oh, good. That's a good way of saying it. Yeah. I mean, and it can be unusual how these ideas come to us. It can be almost mystical how they come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to pay, that's what, one reason why we have to pay attention to the things that are coming through us and trying to get our attention. But nowadays it does seem like there's so much going on that you really have to slow down. You have to slow down. That would be my recommendation in general. And also, if you're doing a product launch, I would recommend taking the time after the launch has taken place just to get offline completely. You know, get offline, get off the cell phone, get off the TV, get off the computer, everything. And just take some time to regenerate.
No computer?
Yeah. That's hard for me too, Connie. But
see, Connie has her iPad and her iPhone and she's connected all the time pretty much.
I love it.
Yeah, I have this iPhone 4S, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And 4GS or whatever. And I have to put it down. I have to. because it becomes sort of a feverish thing.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Fever.
I love it. I do, too. I love it, too. So we've actually come to the end of this wonderful program. I've enjoyed having you both on. I appreciate your coming.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I wish you good luck and Godspeed and everything that you're doing. So thank you again.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. I'll talk to you again.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.